Hey, thanks for joining us, all of our Atlanta area churches, those of you who are joining us from all over the country and literally all over the world. And if you're joining us from all over the country and all over the world, I'm especially glad that you're tuning in today because you are part of the reason that we're doing what we're doing. We're kicking off a generosity initiative across all of 8 of our Atlanta area churches. As you just saw, we're calling it Deeper Wider. Many of you have heard about this and gotten some details. For others of you, this is the first time you're hearing about it. But the goal in the Deeper Wider Generosity Initiative is to maximize our kingdom impact as a collection of churches locally, nationally, and globally. And when you leave here today, you're going to get this Deeper Wider vision guide that's going to give you all the details, most of the details in terms of what this includes, what we want to accomplish. It's a big scope, though you heard on the video. It really is an audaciously big goal. I'm not at our project. I'm not even sure it's possible, but we decided to attempt something that might be impossible, and that is okay. Now, here's the thing. If you haven't been here for very long, here's something you need to know about our collection of churches. What you have accomplished and what we've accomplished together really is amazing. I mean, 8 amazing churches in the Atlanta area, one of the most important cities in the United States, 70,000 active people. That's not a mailing list. These are people who are active in one of our 8 Atlanta churches, plus 200 churches in our network, Southside churches. You're tuning in today. You're part of that. You're an extension of what we do and mirror what we do. And we learn as much from you as maybe you learn from us. Athens Church. And then there are not only about 100 churches in the United States, but about 116 churches spread out across the globe that run our model, learn from us, take advantage of what we provide for them because they want to create outward-facing churches, not just in their cities, but in their country. And collectively, that's about 500,000 people that are impacted on a weekly basis because of what you do. But maybe as amazing as all of that is this. It's been 20 years since we've done any kind of fundraising with our entire organization. And here's how this works, and I understand this. You show up at your local church, whichever church you attend, you give money to that local church, and you look around and you think, hey, I hope that the money I'm giving is going to help us do what we do here and support my family and all those kinds of things. And through the years, we've taken the small percentage of what we don't use locally, and we have invested in what we have been able to do nationally and globally. And while we've done a lot, and this is going to kind of explain a little bit of some of that a lot, we don't talk about that a lot because on Sunday morning we're busy talking about what's going on at the local campus, right? While we've done a lot, there is so much more we can do. And I'm convinced this is the season, not only can we do it, but we must do it. We ought to do it. So I'm asking all of you at all of our Atlanta area churches, all of you at our network churches, all of you who watch online to engage with us in this initiative to leverage our collective generosity in order to maximize our kingdom impact. You are making a kingdom impact locally and nationally and globally, whether you knew that or not. But I want us to put our foot on the gas and maximize our potential. But to do that, that's going to require all of us to maximize our personal generosity to this initiative. And here's the thing. This is what I want you to hear for some of you especially. We're not doing this because your church needs your money. This isn't about your church needing your money. This is about the world needing your influence. Our nation and our world need more churches like your church. And what you are doing is working here, and what you're doing is working there. And entrepreneurial church leaders all over the country and all over the world want in. And we want to throw those doors open wide to include them to create more outward-facing churches in the United States and in the world, along with some other things that are so exciting. A lot of that is right here. And think of it this way. If you're watching online, or maybe you have friends that watch online, but if you're watching online and you've ever thought, wow, I wish there was a church like this church. I'm at North Point today, or at Buckhead Church. If you visited Buckhead Church, or you're watching the Buckhead Church online stream, or any of our online streams, or you have visited Atlanta and one of our churches, and you thought to yourself, I wish there was a church like this in our area. We do too. But we're not just going to wish there was. We're going to do everything in our power to ensure there is. In fact, one of the exciting initiatives that you can read about is we would like to create an outward-facing church in every single community in the United States of 50,000 people or more, so that everybody and every child and every college student and every single adult and every middle schooler and every high schooler could experience the kind of environments that your kids experience, because we want to set the anchor deep in their hearts, and when they they tend to stray, they won't be able to stray far because we have anchored them to the actual first century version of what it means to follow Jesus. Now, if all this talk about money makes you nervous, I understand that. But here's what I want you to hear. So hear me out. 30 years ago, I was in front of a much, much smaller group of people, and I asked them to give generously to an experiment. It was an experiment. We had no members, we had no money, we had no property. We just had an idea. And that experiment, because of their generosity, became the church you are currently seated in. And I know those people. Sandra and I are some of those people, and we are so grateful we said yes. And we gave sacrificially, and I don't miss the money, and I would not go back and undo that decision if my life depended on it because of what I have seen and what we have seen God do. And here's the thing, we're grateful, and 5 years from now, 5 years from now, it's a 2-year campaign with a 5-year investment. 5 years from now, thousands of men, women, students, and children, thousands will be grateful for you because of what you are about to do. Now, the other reason you don't have to get weird or feel weird about the preacher up here talking about money and asking you to give to a generosity campaign is this. People who have embraced, and many of you are here, you get what I'm about to say. People who have embraced what Jesus taught about money and people who have embraced as a lifestyle what Jesus said about possessions would tell you they are never going back. And as one of those, I would tell you I would never, ever go back. And Sandra and I are so fortunate that we were raised in homes and raised in churches that understood tithing and understood first and best giving and understood the value of investing in what God's doing in a community and in the world. And we just want those of you who have never experienced that because of fear, because of debt, because of whatever reason, because of you can't trust the church and all the stories you hear, we want you to engage. And I'm telling you, you will never meet a follower of Jesus who allowed their money to follow Jesus and his kingdom who regrets that. So you don't have to be nervous about this. We don't have to be weird about this. This is just one more opportunity to follow Jesus. Now, all of that begins with the whole idea of following Jesus with our money, the whole idea of what it means to be a steward or a follower of Jesus with our possessions and everything. It all comes back to one simple idea. And today, for a few minutes, I just want to introduce that one simple idea. For some of you, this might be review. For some of this, you've heard this before, but you've sort of drifted from it. I get that. For some of you, this may be a novel idea or a first time you've heard about it. And at the end, I'm going to ask you to spend a week thinking about it, but not doing anything about it. There's no real application for today's message other than a thought exercise. But it all goes back to acknowledging and applying one simple truth. King David said it first, and then King Jesus came along and reiterated it later. And King David made this statement teased out this truth during a prayer that he prayed. And we're going to look at the part of that prayer in just a minute. But here's the one statement from King David's prayer all those years ago that kind of says it all. Here's what he said in a prayer to God. He said, everything in heaven and earth is yours. Everything in heaven and earth, he said, God is yours. In other words, God, you own it all. And we are just managers, and we are simply temporary stewards of it. So here's the context of this prayer. It's kind of interesting. King David was in probably his mid to late 50s. He had settled all the border disputes around the ancient kingdom of Israel. So there was peace in the land. And he decided it was time for God, Yahweh, to have his own temple. All the pagans, you know, the religions in the world, they had temples. And God, Israel's God, Yahweh, lived in a tent. They call it a tabernacle. And it had been a tent or a tabernacle since the days of Moses that required a lot of maintenance and a lot of fixing up because, again, it wasn't a permanent structure. So David decides, I'm going to build God a permanent structure. And so before he goes to work, a prophet came to see him named Nathan. And the prophet Nathan said to David, God spoke to me. And David, a couple of things. First of all, God's not asking for a building because he's the mobile God. He doesn't need a building. He's not tied to a piece of geography. But he appreciates the sentiment. But you can't build God the temple because you're the king. You're the warrior king. There's too much blood on your hands. So your son can build the temple, but you can't build it. And David accepted no as an answer, but then he decided to go to work and collect all the raw materials for this extraordinary structure that later his son Solomon would build. And this is why the first temple in Jerusalem was called Solomon's Temple. So he goes to work to get all the raw materials, because this is going to be an extraordinary building enterprise. So he begins to pull all the materials together, and he personally funds out of his own wealth the first round of materials. And then he announces his intention to all the influencers in the city of Jerusalem and all the influencers in the region, the military leaders, the city council, the wealthy families, the people who have influence, government officials. And he says to all of them, I want us to build our God a temple, and it needs to be magnificent. And the text tells us that when he made this announcement, that they gave willingly, because as you read the story, they saw this as an opportunity to participate in something grand and glorious for their God, and they didn't want to miss out. And then as the influencers in the community began to give toward this project, then the common folk came along and they're like, well, we don't want to miss out either. And these were the people that had very, very little extra. But the text says when the common people, the poorer people, saw their leaders giving generously to this project, the text says that the people rejoiced at the willing response of their leaders, for they had given freely and wholeheartedly to the Lord. So there's this outpouring of generosity toward this project in a way to honor God. So as all of this is happening, David is so overwhelmed by the generosity of the people and the generosity of the nation that he gathers the leaders and he gathers as many people as he could. And to launch this project of bringing together all the natural, all the resources necessary, the money necessary to buy the resources, he prays a prayer. And the chronicler recorded this prayer, and I want to read you a part of this prayer because it's so right on the nose in terms of the posture of anyone who trusts God, and especially in our generation, anyone who follows Jesus. It just explains so clearly how we are to view our wealth, view our income, view our potential, and view our potential collectively as it relates to furthering God's kingdom in the world. And embedded in this prayer really is the posture that I hope all of us will adopt during this season of our church. Here's what David prays. I'm just going to read it to you and maybe make a few comments. He says this. He says, yours, Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the majesty and the splendor. And the reason is, he says, because everything in heaven and earth is yours. It all belongs to you. Anytime you see splendor and glory or greatness in a person or in nature or anywhere, that's all a manifestation of the greatness and the glory and the splendor of God. And then he says this, yours, Lord, and this is coming from a king. This is so unusual for a king to say something like this, even now. Yours, Lord, is the kingdom. In other words, it's not even my kingdom. I'm the king, but I'm smart enough to know it's not my kingdom because everything belongs to you. Yours, Lord, is this kingdom, and you are exalted as head over all. I might wear the crown, but we are not confused. We know who the head of this nation is. It is yours. It's your kingdom. It is not mine. And then listen to this. It's so powerful. If this was front and center the way we lived our lives, he says, wealth and honor, position, recognition, we know they come from you. And you are the ruler of all things. In other words, David says, look, I'm not confused. I have what I have because you gave it to me for a time. And this is true of me as well. And this is true of all of you as well. All of us who have extra. All of us have extra because God allowed us to manage the extra, whether it's position or influence or stuff or just extra money, the money that we save, the extra, we don't live hand to mouth, that ultimately this came from God. And yes, I'm not ignoring the fact that you worked really hard, and you took advantage of those opportunities that came your way. I mean, how many times have you told your story or you've heard the story? It's like I was going along doing my thing and then an opportunity came my way. And if you're a theist, if you believe in God, if you're a Christian, when that opportunity came your way, your instinct was to say, thank you, God, for this opportunity that came my way. And you leveraged it and you took advantage of it and you worked really hard and God honored your work. So yes, you had a role to play, but ultimately we're smart enough to not be confused either, to know that ultimately we don't control the future and we don't control the variables. We took advantage of those opportunities. And David saw what some people in his culture miss, and David saw what unfortunately many people in our culture miss, that there are just too many variables to ever be arrogant. There are just too many variables, too many things that are out of our control to ever take credit, even for our hard work and taking advantage of the opportunities that come our way. That our success and our prosperity, yes, it's a result of some things we did, but ultimately we're smart enough to know. We didn't control, we didn't determine our health. We didn't determine where we were born. We didn't determine when we were born. We didn't determine who we were born to. We didn't determine what it was in us that gave us the drive to work our way out of the environment we were born into. There are just too many variables, that there's never any need. There's never any room for arrogance. That ultimately, to put it bluntly, arrogance is a reflection of ignorance. Arrogant says, I'm too ignorant to understand that I don't control the variables that have allowed me to be as successful as I am. And David is declaring before the whole nation, I'm not confused. I know why I'm the king. I know why I have this position. And I know why I have the margin I do to build this temple for God. Then he says this. He says, in your hands are strength and power to exalt and to give strength to all. In other words, again, he's acknowledging publicly, I am the king only because you chose me to be the king. That I did not choose myself or create this opportunity for myself. And maybe in this moment or leading up to this prayer, he thinks back to how he became the king. And some of you, if you grew up in church, we remember this story. That God says to the prophet Samuel, I'm done with this king. We're going to have a new king. I want you to go to Jesse's house. And I want you to get all of his sons together. Jesse had a bunch of sons. And I'm going to choose the next king of Israel from Jesse's sons. Remember this amazing story? We teach our children this. It's extraordinary. So the prophet Samuel goes to Jesse's home and says, Jesse, I've got some good news for you. There's going to be a dynasty change. And you're going to be the father of the king. Gather your sons. And God is about to choose one of your sons to be the next king of Israel. Remember this story? And so still all the sons come out and Eliab, the oldest, you know, he's looking, he's tall, he's kingly, he's strong. And Samuel's like, easy, this is the guy. And God says, no. He goes to the next one, no. And the prophet's like, Jesse, this awkward question, do you have any more sons? Because God says none of these guys are it. Remember the story? And Jesse's like, well, there's one other guy. We didn't even invite him. It can't possibly be him. David, he's just taking care of the sheep. Surely, I mean, there's king material. Samuel says, I won't leave till you bring him. And in walks David. God says, that's the guy. Samuel's like, this is it. David knew this. He was smart enough not to forget. He was smart enough to remember. He was smart enough to keep front and center. There are too many variables in life to take credit for our success, for our wealth, for our extra, for our margin, for our opportunity, that everything in the heavens and earth, including opportunity, wealth, and strength, and honor come from God and from God alone. And if we have any, the correct posture is gratitude and humility. And here's how you know that's true. Because when you meet successful people who are humble and are quick to give credit to the people around them, and ultimately quick to give credit to God, you are moved by that and you are impressed by that and you are inspired by that. Because you know they, with all their success, they are not confused. And then this. Again, he tips his hat to yet another posture for us to live by. In fact, this is the posture to live by that I just want to promise you that if you assume this posture, you will always be glad you did. And if you don't assume this posture, you'll look back and, well, you wish you had. Here's what he says. This is amazing. He's like, but who am I? But who am I? He's thinking about, he's the king. He's got all this opportunity. He's got this wealth. He's got this, but who am I? Why me? Why me? And then he extends it to the nation. But who am I? And who are my people? Who are we? Who am I? And who are we that we should be able to give as generously as this? He asked the question that every honest wealthy person asks at some point along the way. Why me? And why not them? Why me? And why not them? And because we live in a world where we know what's happening in the world globally and economically, you have all had that thought. You've all asked that question in your own way. You look at what's happening in the world. You go on a global X trip. You meet with people who just don't have the opportunities we have and don't have the wealth that we have. And again, in many cases, they're hand to mouth and they have so much joy. But at the same time, you can't help but wonder, this is the honest question. Why me? Who am I? Why us? Who are we? And again, this was a culture where most people literally lived hand to mouth. When Jesus said, you know, give us this day our daily bread, that was a literal prayer because food didn't keep. There was grain and there was wine. Everything else pretty much spoiled. So daily bread meant daily bread. And if you ran out of grain or if there was a famine or if the harvest didn't come in, entire villages would starve. And David is saying, we actually have extra, but why us? Why us and why my people? Because he was saying that what you all are doing, talking about his kingdom, what you're doing to support this initiative, many people couldn't do because they don't have extra. You've honored us to be those, he says, who can. Who are we? Who am I that God would randomly choose us? Again, I know you come on a Sunday, you show up on a Sunday, or you participate in a small group. Many of you, thousands of you serve, and you see a little bit of the ministry that our churches are doing. But as somebody who's in charge of this whole amazing thing, and I look at the impact, and it's not me, the impact that we have had, it is overwhelming, and it is amazing, and it is easy to be humble because our best ideas weren't my ideas. In fact, every once in a while, somebody will hear about an organization, they'll say, Andy, was this your vision? And I always answer the same way. I say, we passed my vision at year 5. After year 5, it's all been, are you kidding me? Okay? So I am the most amazed and I am the most grateful. And I ask this question, God, why me and why us and why this opportunity? Because everything belongs to you and everything comes from you. That is the posture to live with. That is the posture you never regret. You know what else that does? That is the posture that keeps your hands open for God to give and to take. Because at the end of the day, you say with John the Baptist, a man or a woman can only receive what is given to them from heaven. That's part of my prayer every single day. And then David continues and he says this, everything comes from you. And then again, this is amazing. Everything comes from you, and we have, look at this, and we have given you only what comes from your hand. Lord our God, he says, all this abundance, all this extra, all this margin, all this beyond our daily bread and beyond our daily needs, all of this abundance that we have provided for building you a temple for your holy name comes from your hand and all of it belongs to you. Again, he's saying, we are not confused. We're not confused. We are not giving you anything. We're simply giving it back to you because ultimately it came from you. When this idea goes from your head to your heart, it is a game changer, not just in terms of your money and your possessions. This is a game changer in terms of our entire lives. I can attest to that. And I've seen that play out in my life. I've seen that play out in the lives of so many people. Now, to be clear, okay, we're not building a temple, All right, that's the good news. This is not a capital campaign. You know, capital campaign, you've all been a part of those where an organization's gonna build a thing, so you give your money to build the thing, or they're gonna buy a thing, or they're gonna start a thing, so you give your money. This is way broader than that. We are positioning ourselves to maximize our ability to be conduits through which Jesus continues to build his church, because he promised he's gonna do it anyway, and we have been invited to participate in it, to enlarge his kingdom, to expand his reign and his rule in the hearts and the lives of men, women, students, teenagers, senior adults, every kind of person in every nation in the world. And this is what we've been doing for the last 30 years. But to maximize our collective impact, we have to maximize our personal generosity. And to maximize our generosity, here's the thing. We can't think like owners who donate to the church. And if that has been your mindset, I want to challenge you, at least in these next few weeks as we talk about this, I want to challenge you to try to begin thinking differently. You are not an owner who has some money and who has some wealth, and occasionally or even systematically, you're going to donate to the church. That's not going to get us there. We have got to embrace this mindset that is introduced in the Old Testament, that Jesus reiterated in the New Testament, that we are simply managers and stewards, that everything belongs to God. And for whatever reason, he has allowed us to have extra for the benefit of his kingdom, that we have to adopt the posture of a manager. When you do, three things are going to happen, and I'll wrap this up. Here's three promises. When you begin to think this way, when this becomes the mindset, when this becomes the framework, number one, you will view everything you own, not just cash and not just a percentage, you will view everything you own as a potential tool to further the king, agenda of your king. Your kitchen table, your dining room table, your unfinished basement, your finished basement, your backyard, that extra car, a vacation home, whatever it is, you'll begin to see, wait a minute, this isn't about giving money to a church. This is about everything I own is a potential tool to maximize God's influence in the world and to expand the kingdom of God. And again, many of you have experienced this, because hundreds and hundreds of you at all of our campuses and at all of our network churches, you have opened your home to small groups to meet in your home. You've leveraged your house. You've leveraged your basement. You've leveraged an extra bedroom. You've leveraged your home for middle schoolers and high schoolers. And some of you are real Christians. You opened your home to middle school boys and high school boys, and it's like, oh my goodness, and it's like, how long will it smell? Anyway, so the point is, many of us, we understand this. It's not just cash. It's not just money. If everything belongs to God, and I begin to view everything as a tool that God uses to expand his kingdom through me, that is a game changer. You know what else will happen? And I'm not being critical of anybody in particular. You got to figure this out for yourself. You're going to collect fewer collectibles. And you're going to begin to liquidate things that aren't doing anybody any good. Not because it's a sin to have those things. I'm just telling you, when you adopt this mindset, you see all of that differently. And you'll never go back, and you'll never regret it. Number two, you'll give first and adjust your lifestyle accordingly. You will give first and adjust your lifestyle accordingly. This is not new. I've been teaching this for 30 plus years to all of you. You've heard of me every once in a while. I come back to it. Give, save, live. Give, save, live. You give first, you save second, you live on the rest. You give first, you fund God's kingdom, you save second, you fund your own kingdom, and then you live on the rest. You give, you save, you live. We teach our kids this. We've used jars, we've used apps. We want our kids to grow up giving first, living, saving second, and then living on the rest. You'll think in terms, when you adopt this mindset that I'm an owner, that I'm not an owner, I'm a manager, you will adopt a first and best mindset rather than leftover and last. Most Americans give leftover and last. Don't be most Americans. Leftover and last means I've financed my kingdom. I got everything I want for now, and they need some money. So what can I afford to give? This is not about what can you afford to give. You just need to erase that mindset. That's not what we're talking about. What can I afford to give? And what can I afford to give right now? That's how most people think. But that's not how stewards think. That's not how managers of God's wealth and margin and money think. They think differently than that. So it's not left over and last. It's first and it's best. It's give, save, live on the rest. And then the third thing that's going to happen, and I could spend a lot of time on this, and I'll try not to. And I couldn't decide whether or not to say this, but I'm just going to say it, and please take it within the context that I mean it. This is kind of a guy thing a little bit. Now, I know men and women both wrestle with, you know, stuff and money and possessions, and I mean, I get that. But this next thing that'll happen, and maybe it's just my experience in talking to men and about their money and their possessions. But here's the thing. If you flip the script and even just begin to think, don't do anything. Just begin to think in terms of, okay, I am a manager and a steward. I'm not an owner because everything belongs to God. When you flip the script, here's what's going to happen. I promise. You're going to find it easier to surrender your entire life to your King. I have in my mind this video. I don't know if anybody's ever made this, but I imagine somebody being baptized, and as they're going down, they're holding their wallet up out of the water, and then they come back up like, okay, you can have all of me, but you can't have this. The reason I say that is this. Listen up. We are all inclined, not just men, we're all inclined. We are all inclined to equate wealth, income, and our stuff with our personal value. We're all inclined to equate or to conflate and to get mixed up about the fact that what we have and what we drive and where we live and how much money we have in the bank and when we can retire, we have a tendency to equate that with our identity. So here's the challenge. So giving up control of your money, and here's why I say control of your money. When you decide to give first, that feels like you're giving up control of your money. Before I know what's gonna happen this month, I'm gonna give first. When giving up control of our wealth feels like we are giving up control or losing control of our lives. That's what it feels like. Because we equate our money and our possessions and our lifestyle with our lives. And this is amazing. And Jesus saw us coming. And he says, hey, let me ask you a question. And I'm going to give you the Jesus question. And we all know the right answer. And then Jesus is going to say, well, since you know the right answer, why don't you live that way? But here's the question. He saw us coming. He says, okay, I get that whole identity thing and, you know, what people think and you equate what you have with money. But come on, guys. Come on, ladies and gentlemen. Is not life more than what you eat, what you wear? That's what he said. Here's what I say. Isn't life more than what you drive and where we vacation and how much we've saved? And when we can retire, and how much we accumulate, and how much we're going to leave our kids. Isn't life more than all that? To which we would say, yeah, but, and Jesus is like, I'm not done. Let me say it in a different way. He's so brilliant. He says, by worrying about how much you make, didn't make, should make, could make, how much they make, by worrying about all this, by thinking about all this, by kind of measuring your progress in life by, you know, what you don't make, should make, could make, and how much they make. He says, by worrying about that, here's his actual version. By worrying about all that, does it add hours to your life? In other words, this is so brilliant. By worrying about all that, does it add to life? In other words, if you've equated your life with all this stuff accidentally, but you know worrying about all that stuff and having all that stuff does nothing to extend your life. In fact, worrying about it might subtract hours from your life. Then Jesus says, come on. Obviously, your life isn't any of that. So quit living like it is. He says to me, and he says to all of us, here's the thing, then I'm done. Whatever we equate with life, savings, things, grades, where you go to school, professional success, whatever you equate with life, we will cling to as if our lives depend on it. This is why we cling to our stuff. This is why the whole idea of pre-deciding to give feels like I'm out of control because I'm losing my life. It's why we worry. We're confused. And Jesus would like to unconfuse all of us. You'll find it easier to surrender your entire life to your King when you acknowledge and begin to live as if you are a manager and not an owner. When you take off the owner hat like King David and say, okay, I'm not confused. I'm the king. I didn't make myself king. I got all this extra and opportunity. That all came from you. I am managing it for a time. Here's the thing. We cannot, this is why this third point, there's so much to say. I'll keep moving. We cannot surrender to our actual king. Men, let me just talk to us a second. Men, we cannot. It's not that we don't want to. It's not that we don't try. We cannot surrender to our actual king until we dethrone the imposter king. And Jesus knew that our attitude and approach to wealth, wealth management, and wealth accumulation was going to be the number, he says this, we'll talk about it in a couple of weeks, is going to be the number one competitor with who rules and reigns in our life. And I'm just telling you, show me a man who's dealt with this and has surrendered all of this to King Jesus, and I will show you a man who will never go back to living the other way, and who has more peace, and who probably has more prosperity because he's redefined what prosperity really is. So this week, here's your assignment. I just want you to practice thinking like managers, okay? So this is gonna be kind of fun because you don't have to do anything. Now, and don't get in the car and honey, that's what I've been to. Don't do that, okay? We'll see, because one of you, come on, I know how it is. The less generous person marries the not so generous, you know, the more generous person, somebody wants to give away everything. The person's like, if I let her, we're not gonna, I get it. You're dating that person and it's like, yeah, don't have that conversation. This is a thought exercise you're gonna do individually. We'll have conversations later. I just want you this week to think, okay, what would I do in this situation if I really thought about myself as a manager, not an owner? What would I do in this situation as you face different conflicts or tension as it relates to finances or planning or whatever it might be, or just stuff in your home or stuff that's not in your home? What if I really thought in terms of I'm not an owner, I'm a manager? What would it look like if you really believed and embraced the idea that everything in heaven and earth is his? What would that look like? What would that change? What kind of tension does that create in you? I want you to pay attention to that tension and do the exercise. And we'll pick it up right there in part two of Deeper, Wider. But don't go anywhere. Right now, I'm going to ask somebody from all of our Atlanta area churches to come up and provide you with some important next steps.
As Andy was saying, this is an exciting and important season in the life of our church, and we want to make sure that everyone is engaged or is equipped to be able to be engaged. And so on your way out today, every household is going to be able to get one of these deeper, wider vision guides. In it, there's helpful content. There's all the information that you need about the initiative that we were just talking about. There's also in there the commitment card. You'll see that in there. Here's what I want you to do with that, you guys. I don't want you to go home and like rush to try to fill it out or anything like that. I just want you to commit to put it in a place where you'll see it, you and your spouse will see it, you'll talk about it, and then most importantly, you guys, I hope that you'll just pray about it and you'll begin to ask that all-important question of God, how would you have us participate? Because you guys, for me, just hear my heart, this is not primarily a financial thing, it's a faith thing, and I want us to grow spiritually as we go through this journey together over the next 5 weeks. And so put it somewhere where you're going to see it, pray about it, and just ask the Lord, God, how would you have us participate in this? And then also, we'll have a chance to bring those commitment cards back on March the 9th. We're going to have an event at North Point where all of our churches will come together. And then right here at Gwinnett Church, we'll have Commitment Sunday on March the 23rd. But you'll see those dates in here as well. Also, we've created a website. It's got other helpful content on there. It's got stuff that is good for conversation with the whole family. And if you're in a small group here at Gwinnett Church, it's got some content that we'll be tracking along with the series that you can look at, some questions for discussion, as well as a 15-day discussion guide. And so hopefully you'll be able to grab that. That's deeperwider.com. And so you can go and check that out. And for those of you that watch online, you're not in the Atlanta area, it's got everything on that website for you to be able to participate as well. And we want want you to be able to participate. And so if you have other questions along the way over the course of the next 5 weeks, there's a deeper, wider hub out in the hallway right outside of Wombaland, and we'll have some staff members out there that can help answer your questions. I know that's a lot of information, but we're so glad that you guys were here this Sunday. We love you. We're grateful for you and excited for what God's got in store to do in us and to do through us. You guys have a great rest of your Sunday.